This is a pretty big signal that this is a high priority for the new administration.
Quad nations prepare for virtual meeting. It's Thursday, March 11th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Follow us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, undocumented and unvaccinated down under. Building Cambodia currency. Asia business news. Going to Disneyland for the vaccine attraction. And the last newsstand. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden and the leaders of Japan, India, and Australia are planning to meet virtually for the first summit of the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue. The group of countries, also known as the Quad, will likely discuss China's vaccine diplomacy and other regional issues. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has more.
Combating the global pandemic will be a focus of the virtual meeting between President Joe Biden and the leaders of Japan, India, and Australia, a group known as the Quad.
A range of issues, of course, will be discussed. We expect to be discussed, facing the global community, from the threat of COVID to economic cooperation, and of course, to the climate crisis.
The Quad is not a formal military alliance, but often seen as a counterweight to growing Chinese influence in the Asia-Pacific region. The Friday meeting will be the first leaders' summit since the Quad's establishment in 2007.
All eyes are on how the Biden administration is going to be pursuing its Asia strategy. So this is a pretty big signal that this is a high priority for the new administration.
The leaders are expected to discuss China's aggressive vaccine diplomacy. Beijing has pledged almost half a billion shots worldwide, an effort that some say is intended to expand its political clout. The U.S. has not outlined plans to provide vaccines abroad, but has pledged $4 billion to COVAX, the UN mechanism for global vaccine distribution.
We have not defined what volume of vaccines will become available for distribution to COVAX or distribution to friendly partner governments, but we have committed in principle to doing that.
India is reportedly urging other Quad members to invest in its vaccine production capacity to counter Chinese vaccine diplomacy. More details on the Quad's vaccine commitment is expected after Friday's meeting.
And it will be done in a multilateral framework. Not just the Americans are going to do it, but as you saw, the commitment was through the WHO. We're coming back to a global response to the pandemic. So I think there's small incremental steps here, but I don't think they want to overreach until they get the COVID-19 situation in the United States a little bit more stabilized and under control.
The Quad is also expected to discuss China's military growth. The country is increasing its defense budget by 6.8% in 2021.
Absent a convincing deterrent, China will be emboldened to continue to take action to supplant the established rules-based international order and the values represented in our vision for a free and open Indo-Pacific.
China's $208 billion defense budget is a quarter of the U.S. figure, but four times larger than Japan's. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
You'll find more on this and all the stories you hear on VOA Asia by following us on Twitter and Facebook. You can also see and read stories on our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Myanmar security forces target striking railroad workers' neighborhood. North Korea to begin COVID-19 vaccinations. Top U.S. officials to promote peace and security during visit to Asia. Bangladesh TV hires country's first transgender news anchor. A Bali village works together to compost organic waste. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by our website, voanews.com. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. There is a call for an amnesty for the estimated 100,000 undocumented workers in Australia because of fears they could miss out on the coronavirus vaccine. From Sydney, Phil Mercer tells us more.
They are an unseen workforce in Australia, from cleaning to hospitality and farm work. Of the estimated 100,000 undocumented workers, about two-thirds are employed in agriculture. Without a valid working visa, they're in jobs illegally. Australia's Department of Home Affairs said they were unlawful non-citizens. But farmers, unions and some politicians are now calling for an amnesty to allow undocumented workers to be given employment visas. The federal government has promised a vaccine for everyone in Australia, regardless of their visa status, including asylum seekers awaiting the outcome of their refugee claims. But there are concerns undocumented workers won't come forward, fearing deportation. Dr. Joanna Howe, a senior lecturer at the University of Adelaide, says it's a problem that needs fixing.
There are certainly public health risks that the government may assume that it's vaccinated broadly the Australian community, but then there are these pockets that escape that because they've got no incentive to come forward. In fact, they're extremely fearful of accessing the vaccine.
Australian authorities will soon require vaccine recipients to divulge where they were born and the languages they speak. The data will help show the government if certain minority communities are avoiding the vaccine. After a slow start, health officials insist that more than 500,000 vaccinations a week will soon be given in Australia. A mass inoculation program began last month with the Pfizer-BioNTech drug. Domestic production of the AstraZeneca vaccine is expected to deliver 1 million doses each week in Australia by the end of the month. New South Wales, the nation's most populous state, has gone 50 consecutive days without a locally acquired COVID-19 case. Australia has recorded 29,000 coronavirus infections since the pandemic began. The health department says 909 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, the UN Security Council agreed on a statement condemning violence against Myanmar coup protesters and urging military restraint, according to diplomats. The statement dropped language condemning it as a coup and threatening possible further action. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. The National Bank of Cambodia is aiming to reduce the country's dependency on the U.S. dollar with the introduction of digital currencies and the phasing out of small denomination U.S. dollar bills, $1, $2, and $5 notes in favor of Cambodia's local currency, the riel. Luke Hunt has more from Phnom Penh.
Cambodia has run a dual currency system since United Nations peacekeepers arrived to oversee elections in 1993, bringing with them US dollars which circulated in tandem with the local riel. However, the central bank says demand for the riel has increased an average of 16% a year for the last two decades and hopes fewer US dollars circulating will give it greater control over the Cambodian economy. Small and large denomination notes ranging from 100 to 100,000 riel, or about $25, have been introduced alongside Cambodia's first digital currency, the Kong, as the number of US dollars in circulation is reduced. Bekong is aimed at enabling payments between traditional banks and other financial institutions on smartphones and computers. Importantly, the government is hoping Bekong will bring the unbanked population, the roughly 70% of all Cambodians who rarely use a bank, into the banking system. Bekong is also aimed at allowing the central bank to crack down on money laundering and the black economy while providing stability for the riel in the absence of the US dollars. David Totten, a financial analyst with Emerging Markets Consulting, said Bekong would facilitate faster, cheaper and more secure payments between clients from different financial institutions.
And the idea behind that is it will facilitate more financial inclusion, so more Cambodians will sign up for financial services. That will facilitate development of e-commerce, and in the longer term, it is hoped that that will encourage adoption of the real and eventual replacement of the US dollar for all financial transactions in Cambodia.
Money has a unique history in Cambodia, which is on show at the Money Museum in Phnom Penh. The real was introduced following independence in 1953. Under the 1975-79 Khmer Rouge rule, money was abandoned, banks abolished, and the National Bank of Cambodia blown up as Khmer Rouge leader Pol Pot tried to force a utopian agrarian society onto Cambodians, resulting in a genocide that claimed about 2 million lives. A dual currency economy also recalls the days when Cambodia was seen as an economic basket case, struggling to rebuild after a 30-year war that ended in 1998. Brendan Layla, a director with Ernst & Young in Cambodia, said the National Bank of Cambodia had raised eyebrows by becoming the first central bank in the region to embrace a digital currency. He also says Bukong will enable Cambodians who work in the cities to send money back to the provinces at cheaper rates. Almost $60 billion was transferred within the country through different payment options in 2019.
So very important development for the Cambodian economy. What they're trying to achieve with Bakong is to effectively bring all the current platforms, the apps, etc., payment e-wallets onto one platform that the central bank, the NBC, can control through the blockchain technology, which is blockchain's basically like a ledger that records all transactions. And that will facilitate instantaneous transactions, both for the payment of goods and services, but also for transferring from one account to another.
Adding to a sense of urgency is the state of the Cambodian economy, which has buckled under the COVID-19 pandemic and the withdrawal of some trade perks by the European Union because of the country's human rights record. Analysts said expectations were high that Bukong and a return to a single, locally based physical currency will give the economy a lift by opening banking to most of the population. Luke Hunt for VOA News, Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. The United Nations Human Rights Office says as of March 8th, at least 67 people, including women and children, have been confirmed to have been killed in Myanmar. Hundreds more have been injured. The UN team again called on the military to halt use of force. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. It's time for VOA Asia Business Scene with Josh Nist.
Smart home assistants such as Amazon's Alexa has found success worldwide. However, tech firms in Japan are reporting huge demand for more human-like alternatives. Companies such as Yamaha, Sharp, and GrooveX are seeing a spike in their robot pets as people seek solace during the pandemic. Yamaha's humanoid pet named Charlie is described to be more chatty than a pet, but less work than a lover. Nami Himura, a test customer of Charlie Robot, says the robot has helped her while she is living alone during the pandemic.
He is there as someone for me to chat with other than family or friends on social networks or a boss I needed to produce a report for.
Groove X's Lovot, a robot that is the size of a toddler, costing around $2,800, brings joy to users with its penguin-like wings that flutter up and down. Kieko Suzuki, a spokeswoman of Lovot's maker Groove X, says Lovots are helping people with home lives.
Especially due to the pandemic, many people feel lonely. They cannot go out and meet people as much as they used to. We have received lots of feedback from customers that living with a Lovot eases their loneliness and brings a cheerful atmosphere to the family.
However, for those who still want to enjoy the company of Lovots but without the hefty cost of purchasing one, visiting a Lovot cafe is a more affordable option. The tradition of street food vendors in Singapore has seen a growing number of young chefs returning to their roots during the pandemic, as it has recently been recognized as an intangible cultural heritage by the United Nations. The city states street food vendors, also known as hawkers, offer a wide variety of cuisines influenced by Southeast Asian nations' ethnic Chinese, Indian, and Muslim populations. Hawkers usually focus on just one or two dishes, with chicken and rice being the ever-popular traditional meal. Even after the nation shifted into an affluent financial hub, the hawker tradition has lived on with open-air food courts throughout the city. However, many chefs are heading into retirement, which has led them to acquire apprentices to usher in a new generation of hawkers. Still, there are many challenges for hawkers to recruit young Singaporeans. Among them, competition from higher-paying office jobs and the stigma of being a hawker. KFC Toh, the founder of Makan Sutra, says public opinion of hawkers has shifted from when it first started.
Yeah, back in the day, it was really seen as a profession for those who have no root into life.
Schools and government initiatives have also been formed to help preserve the culinary traditions. For Business Scene, I'm Josh Nist.
Making headlines in Asia, exiled Tibetans living in India protested outside the Chinese embassy in New Delhi Wednesday to mark the 62nd anniversary of the failed uprising in Lhasa against Chinese control that caused their spiritual leader, the Dalai Lama, to flee. China views him as a dangerous separatist. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Disneyland Park in Anaheim, California now has permission to open on a limited basis. But perhaps the biggest attraction of Disneyland is the fact it has become the first mass vaccination site for the COVID-19 vaccine distribution in Orange County. Angelina Bagsarian has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Sites providing COVID-19 vaccines have opened throughout California, in stadiums, expo centers, and even in Disneyland. The resort is the first of five of super COVID-19 vaccination sites, capable of vaccinating around 7,000 people every day. On the first day alone, more than 10,000 people submitted their vaccination requests on the Orange County website.
Don't come today if you don't have an appointment. It's been incredible, the turnout today.
Because of the huge number of people who want to get vaccinated as soon as possible, the Orange County website kept crashing. Susan came with her husband. She believes they both were extremely lucky.
So that we could live? So that we definitely, that's what other reason.
I got mine yesterday.
I got mine today.
Orange County authorities warn there might be long lines and wait times.
At this time, for this next few weeks, until we get more vaccine, I would ask for your patience and allow the vulnerable senior with chronic health condition the opportunity to get vaccinated first.
California's Governor Gavin Newsom has announced the start of Phase 1, which includes vaccinating medical workers as well as people over 65. That would affect over 6.5 million people. But right now, there simply aren't enough vaccines in the state. It is not by accident that Disneyland was picked as a super COVID-19 vaccination site.
Disney has been such a great partner. They're the largest employer in Orange County. It was a natural site to actually have it because people know where it's located. It's also well known. As you can imagine, the Disney advertising and the knowledge for folks, people have a very good feeling about Disney.
Disneyland has been closed since March 2020, and only recently some stores in the theme park opened back up. But the amusement rides remain closed. Anaheim residents want to be vaccinated soon so they could return to their jobs in the many restaurants, stores, and hotels in the area surrounding Disneyland.
Because I work for the public, so that's why I decide to get the vaccine to make sure that I can protect myself and others people.
Another large COVID vaccination site has opened at the Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. About 12,000 people will be able to get vaccinated there every day. Another vaccination site has opened in San Diego, one more in Riverside. And everywhere, there are long lines of people who can't wait to get vaccinated and get back to what used to be normal everyday life. For Angelina Bagdasarian in Los Angeles, Anna Rice, VOA News.
We've heard now for several years that the number of people who read printed newspapers has been declining in the United States, and it's been happening for more than two decades. Arturo Martinez dropped by a neighborhood newsstand in Los Angeles and spoke with its owner about the future of his business, threatened by both the pandemic and the Internet. Eduardo Bercerel is a salesman at Al's Newsstand. We hear from him in his own words.
I am Eduardo. Everybody call me Eddie. And I work at the newsstand. I am a salesman, the morning guy. Good morning, ladies. Good morning. Happy Monday.
Alan Brooks, the owner of Al's Newsstand.
I started selling papers when I was 8 because I wanted extra money in my pocket. And here I am. I'm 79 years old, and I'm still selling papers. My name is Alan Brooks, and I own Al's Newsstand. I'm one of the last standing newsstands. We opened this in 89. It was like a little gold mine. And people, they were hungry for a newsstand in Beverly Hills. And I had a total of 8 different newsstands, but I made a great living. I put 2 kids through college. I was very, very happy with it.
And you're 9 years old?
Yeah.
You like George and Archie, my grandsons.
This will be my 17th year. I'm very happy. Since I started to work here at the newsstand with Mr. Al, very happy. Almost all the locals, all the neighbors, everybody knows me. It's like a little family.
Thank you, sir.
I just like talking to people. I like doing business, making money. And that's just a nice sense of community that I enjoy when that wells up. That's what sort of nurtures me.
Thank you so much. We just live around the corner.
So. Mr. James, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good.
Everything okay so far?
Good,
sir. Okay. Stay happy Monday, sir. Okay? Thank you, sir. Happy Monday. New York, Wall Street, Financial Times, New York Post, and LA Times.
The newsstand business has definitely changed. It's become prehistoric, and that's because of the Internet. A lot of magazines went to online only. If I'm allowed to bring in items that will help make a profit, cigarettes, candy, miscellaneous, water, chips, and increase my revenue, will stay. And if not, I would have to think of selling it.
The other day came one of family from overseas, and I remember one of the kids, about maybe 7 years old, told your dad, "Hey, Dad, what is this? What is a newsstand? What is a newsstand? I don't know. What is a newsstand?" So we'll see, but was very funny. Take care, okay? Happy Monday. See you later.
Eduardo Bercerel, salesman at Al's Newsstand, and Alan Brooks, the owner of Al's Newsstand, in their own words. We thank VOA's Arturo Martinez for bringing us the story. That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. You can stop by any of our digital platforms whenever you like. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just look us up. Our name is VOA Asia. Thanks for listening today, and thanks to our team that helps bring you this program every day, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.